Imagine finding out that the highly trusted AI tool your entire engineering team relies on has secretly been rewriting your company's proprietary code for like the last 3 weeks.
Right.
And the reason nobody noticed, the malware was literally authoring its own commits and signing them as an automated AI assistant.
It is the perfect camouflage for modern software development. I mean, if you see a commit pop up from Claude Code, most developers today just assume someone on the team is testing a new integration.
Yeah, they just click approve.
Exactly. They approve it without a second glance.
Well, welcome to this special deep dive cybersecurity briefing. If you are prepping for a morning security sink or actively defending your own infrastructure, or, maybe you just want to stay sharp on how quickly the threat landscape is shifting, we have a really critical agenda for you today.
We do.
Our mission today is to unpack a sudden, severe trio of threats that completely upend how we think about trust and software. We are looking at two massive software supply chain campaigns and one foundational Linux vulnerability.
And since we are framing this as a Cyber Mornings daily briefing, we are focusing heavily on concise transitions, practical impacts, and the clear takeaways you actually need.
Right, no fluff.
Yeah, the goal isn't just to admire the problem. It is to make sure you know exactly what you are up against and, more importantly, how to lock down your environment today.
Let's get straight into it. So the first threat is a massive supply chain attack orchestrated by a GitHub account operating under the name BufferZone Core.
Yeah, that's the one.
Security researchers are calling what they deployed sleeper packages, and they hit both the Ruby Gems and Go modules ecosystems. But before we get into the actual payload, I want to understand the delivery. I mean, they're using names like Active Support Logger and a Grub client.
Right, they are relying purely on type squatting. Developers, moving fast, typing out an install command, and they miss a dash, or maybe they add an extra letter.
Okay, let's unpack this because it sounds exactly like sleeper agents in a spy movie,
Yeah,
right?
that's a great way to look at it.
They just masquerade as these well-known modules. They sit in the public repositories, looking totally harmless, just waiting for a developer to accidentally install them.
Waiting for that inevitable human error. But the moment someone makes that typo, the behavior is wildly different depending on whether they are coding in Ruby or Go.
Okay, let's look at the Ruby side first. If a developer accidentally pulls in one of these BufferZone Corp gems, I think the sources mentioned not date utils erb as an example, what is the practical impact? Like, right away.
Well, the Ruby gems are designed for a smash-and-grab operation right at the installation phase. It doesn't even wait for you to actually run your code.
Wait, really? Just installing it triggers it.
Just installing it. The moment the package manager downloads and extracts the gem, it triggers an automated script to harvest credentials. It aggressively scans for environment variables, SSH keys, AWS secrets, and those hidden config files like .npmrc.
Okay, for anyone listening who might be a bit removed from the day-to-day coding, let's contextualize that. And .npmrc file isn't just a basic settings file, is it?
Oh no, it is essentially a gold mine. The .npmrc file often contains the authentication tokens your system uses to prove it has the right to download private, proprietary code.
So if an attacker grabs that token,
They can impersonate your developer account, they can download your company's private code, or worse, publish malicious updates under your actual name.
wow. And the malware just bundles all these tokens and AWS keys and ships them out?
Yeah, it exfiltrates them immediately to an attacker-controlled endpoint. They use a service called webhook.site.
Isn't that super noisy?
It's a very noisy process if you are actively monitoring your outbound network traffic.
Yeah.
But the reality is, most teams just aren't watching for outbound HTTPS traffic during a routine package installation.
By the time they realize the library is broken, the secrets are gone.
Exactly, already in the attacker's hands.
Now, you mentioned that was the smash and grab. The Go modules take a much stealthier approach, right? The sources call out modules like LogCore or Go and Config.
Yeah, the Go ones are nasty.
Because instead of just stealing data on install, they actively tamper with GitHub actions. But I'm stuck on this part because the sources say they plant fake Go wrappers into cache directories. How does a fake wrapper trick the system into running malware?
Think about how an operating system decides what program to run. When an automated system types the command Go, the system looks through a specific list of directories to find the executable file named Go.
The system path.
Right, the system path. What the BufferZone Corp malware does is drop a malicious executable, also named Go, into a cache directory that gets prioritized ahead of the legitimate installation.
So it essentially cuts the line.
Yes.
The system asks for the Go compiler, and the malware basically raises its hand first.
That is exactly it. When the automated CI runner, which is just the server automatically building your code, tries to compile the project, it accidentally triggers this malicious wrapper.
And then what? It breaks the build.
No, that's the insidious part. The malware wakes up, executes whatever backdoor logic it wants, and then quietly passes the original command down to the real Go compiler.
Ah, so the build succeeds anyway. The developer gets a green checkmark. They have zero idea that the server just executed a malicious payload.
Zero idea. And that payload is focused on persistence. The Go modules actually add a hard-coded SSH public key directly into the compromised host's authorized keys file.
Man, they are modifying the literal guest list for the server.
Yep.
They drop their own VIP pass into the file, which means they don't even need stolen credentials to get back in. They can just walk right through the front door.
Whenever they feel like it.
Yeah.
And that level of access is catastrophic for a build server. So, the immediate takeaway for you listening. The buffer zone core packages have been yanked or blocked. But deleting the package does not revoke a stolen AWS key.
Right.
And it definitely does not remove a rogue SSH key from your host. You must review your network logs, check your authorized keys files for unknown entries, and, you know, rotate your secrets if your CI pipelines touch these ecosystems recently.
Yeah, that is a terrifying layer 7 problem. But, you know, while Buffer Zone Corp relied on tricking developers with fake names, our next threat didn't bother with fakes at all.
No, it didn't.
It just hijacked the legitimate, highly trusted tools themselves, which shows how an isolated compromise can become this massive, cascading ecosystem failure. We are talking about PyTorch Lightning.
Right. And for context, PyTorch Lightning is not some obscure side project. It is a massive, foundational, open source Python framework.
Used by pretty much everyone in AI.
Exactly. Data science and AI teams globally. We're talking over 31,100 stars on GitHub.
And the sources confirm that versions 2.6.2 and 2.6.3, which were published on April 30, 2026, were compromised. So anyone pulling the latest version of this incredibly popular tool over those days was just downloading malware.
Yeah, the campaign is being tracked as Mini Shai Hulud. It's attributed to a threat group called Team PCP, who are allied with the LAPS More group.
The sources also mentioned they recently launched a dark web onion site after getting banned from X.
They did. But, you know, politics aside, their execution here is highly sophisticated.
Mm.
When a developer imports the compromised Lightning module, it automatically runs a script called start.py.
Okay.
And that script's only job is to reach out and download the Bun JavaScript runtime.
Wait, I have a major question here. Why Bun? Like, if I am a security tool monitoring a Python machine learning environment and I suddenly see an 11 megabyte JavaScript engine getting downloaded, shouldn't that set off every alarm bell?
You would think so, but it is actually a brilliant evasion tactic.
Yeah.
Many endpoint detection and response tools, your EDRs, they are context aware.
Right.
They monitor Python processes for common Python-based attacks. By suddenly pivoting to a lightning-fast JavaScript runtime, executing an obfuscated payload, a file called writerruntime.js, they completely bypass the behavioral signatures those security tools are looking for.
So they just change the language mid-conversation so the guards stop understanding them?
Pretty much. And here's where the damage starts. That JavaScript payload steals the developer's GitHub tokens and immediately validates them against the GitHub API.
Oh, wow.
If the token is active, the malware uses it to inject a worm-like payload into up to 50 different repository branches that the stolen token has access to.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because it doesn't just quietly push the code. It literally impersonates Anthropic's Claude code in its commits.
Yeah, it's weaponized social engineering. Developers have massive alert fatigue. They see dozens of automated commits every day from AI coding assistants. By slapping the latest Claude code on the commit, the attackers ensure a human reviewer will probably just skim right past it.
They assume the machine was just refactoring something.
Exactly.
Which perfectly explains the downstream avalanche.
Yeah.
Because this didn't stay isolated to Python AI researchers. The contagion spread to the messaging platform Intercom Client version 7.0.4. It even hit packages with Intercom PHP.
Yeah, the PHP ecosystem got hit too.
How does Intercom get infected by a machine learning framework? I mean, what's the aha connection there?
It comes down to transitive dependencies. A transitive dependency is essentially the software supply chain's version of a friend of a friend. Your application relies on package A, package A relies on package B, and package B relies on PyTorch Lightning.
So you never explicitly invited PyTorch Lightning to the party.
Right, but it walked in anyway. In this specific case, Intercom traces the compromise back to a local installation of an audio processing tool called Pianote Audio.
Okay.
That audio tool explicitly listed PyTorch Lightning as a dependency. When an Intercom developer installed that audio tool, the package manager dutifully pulled down the compromised Lightning package.
And because that developer had active tokens with publishing rights for Intercom, the mini Shai-Hulud malware stole those tokens and used them to push the payload into Intercom's official clients.
It weaponizes the trust hierarchy. And the exfiltration is incredibly resilient, too. They try to send the stolen data to a remote server, 0.mascan.cloud over port 443.
But what if that fails, like if a firewall blocks it?
If it fails, the malware falls back to using your own stolen GitHub tokens to create a brand new public GitHub repository, literally titled, A Mini Shai-Hulud Has Appeared.
You're kidding.
Nope, it just dumps your secrets right there in the open.
The audacity is just staggering. So, takeaway for the listener right now. The Lightning quarantine is lifted, but if you had versions 2.6.2 or 2.6.3 anywhere in your dependency tree, you need to roll back to the safe version, 2.6.1, immediately.
And rotate all exposed secrets. Treat that machine as fully compromised.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so those first two attacks focus on stealing the keys to the castle by exploiting the software we build on top of our server.
Right, the application layer.
But what happens if the foundational operating system running underneath it all has a critical flaw?
Well, that brings us to copy fail.
Yes, CVE-2026-31431. It has a CVSS severity score of 7.8. This is a local privilege escalation, or LPE vulnerability, affecting major Linux distributions like Amazon Linux, Ubuntu, and RHEL that have shipped since 2017.
What's fascinating here is the mechanics of it. The research teams at JIT.io, in theory, discovered this flaw deep within the Linux kernel's cryptographic subsystem, specifically a module called AlephAed.
Okay, but why does a cryptographic module give someone root access to a server? That feels disconnected.
It traces back to an optimization error from 2017. The kernel developers were trying to speed up how the system processes encrypted data. So they created a shortcut for how data is copied into memory.
Makes sense for performance.
Right. But they made a fatal assumption. They failed to properly check if the destination memory page was marked as read-only before writing the output.
Oh, no.
Because of that missing check, an unprivileged user, meaning a low-level account with zero administrative rights, can force the kernel to write 4 controlled bytes directly into the page cache of any readable file in the system.
Okay, let me try an analogy here. Tell me where this breaks down.
Go for it.
It's like realizing the master key for an entire high-security apartment building can be forged with a tiny 732-byte piece of chewing gum.
That's actually pretty accurate. That chewing gum is the Python script exploit.
Because I don't have to break down the vault door. I just jam the lock with something tiny.
Exactly. Operating systems use a page cache to speed things up. Instead of reading a file from the slow hard drive every time, the kernel keeps a copy of frequently used files in the fast system memory, the RAM.
Right.
In this vulnerability, the attacker isn't touching the hard drive. They're splicing 4 bytes of data into the cached copy of a highly sensitive file.
And the Python exploit specifically targets the cached copy of Isubinsu, right?
Yes. The su command stands for switch user. It is how you elevate privileges to become the root administrator. Because it has situated bit, anyone running it temporarily gets root powers.
Normally, you'd need the password, though.
Normally. But with CopyFail, they use that 2017 optimization error to corrupt the cached copy of su. They inject their own shellcode, so next time su is called, the kernel executes that poisoned cache version as root. Game over.
Wow. And the sources mention this echoes the infamous dirty pipe flaw.
It does. But it's terrifying because it requires no race conditions, it's highly portable, and it completely crosses container boundaries.
Wait, I really want to highlight that. People assume a container is a secure, isolated box.
That is the illusion of containerization. Containers share the underlying host operating system's kernel, which means they share the kernel's page cache system-wide.
So if I hack a low-level web container,
you can use copy-fail to corrupt the shared page cache. When the host system tries to use that cached file, they execute the malware. You break out of the container and take over the entire physical host machine.
That is a staggering systemic failure. So, as we wrap up this briefing, let's synthesize the practical takeaways for you listening right now. First, you need to check for type-squatted or sleeper packages in your CI pipelines.
Right. Look for buffer zone CORB artifacts.
Second, audit your transitive dependencies immediately, especially if you're running PyTorch Lightning or Intercom tools. And third, patch your Linux kernels to close that 2017 copy fail loophole.
This raises an important question, though, because in all three cases, the damage is done automatically and silently. Proactive, continuous auditing is no longer optional. It's a requirement.
It really is. And it leaves you with one final thing to mull over today. As our software stacks grow taller, as we pull in massive machine learning frameworks and interconnected APIs, are we essentially automating our own compromise by trusting layers of code no single human has actually read?
This scary thought.
Definitely something to consider as you review your dependency logs. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive briefing.